And we're live. Welcome back to the Wheelie Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Micah Toll, and I'm joined again by Electrek's Seth Weintraub. How's it going, Seth?
I'm good.
Awesome. And we have a pile of new e-bike unveilings this week. Mostly unveilings. We've got new e-bikes from Electrek, from Ampler, from Bike Tricks, a little bit of analysis of some new batteries from Rad, and some other interesting stories. So let's see, where are we going to start this week, Seth?
All right. Electrek One shockingly unveiled as low-cost premium e-bike with auto-shifting gearbox.
Yeah, this one really came out of left field because if anyone's familiar with electric e-bikes, they're, like the electric XP guys. They're known for, budget-friendly sort of entry-level e-bikes. Not bad e-bikes, but just, nothing fancy. Very much like, simple, works, doesn't cost more than $1,000. And suddenly they roll out this like totally different type of e-bike. It's a commuter e-bike with super high-end parts. It's got a pinion gearbox transmission along with a Gates carbon drive. And it is just like totally different than anything this company has produced before. It's got a narrow, probably like 2.5 inch, 20-inch diameter tires. Obviously, it's going to have, hydraulic disc brakes, that kind of thing, because they are definitely going up market. But the real kicker here has got to be that pinion gearbox, which by itself, if you just tried to like order that, you go to a bike shop and just buy that gearbox for your bike, would probably cost around $2,000, which is the price of the bike itself, $1,999. There's a chance it'll go up after the pre-launch period, but for now, $2,000, that gets you this bike. So it's kind of crazy just, how much gear they put on this thing. That same motor, which includes not only auto shifting, but auto electric shifting. So, you can dial it into however you'd like. You can have it shift whenever you want. That exact motor, I think the cheapest bike it's on is something like a $10,000 e-bike. They've got a version on a $13,000 Strommer e-bike. So, I mean, this is stuff that like has no business being on electric e-bike, but here it is. And so it's just like a fascinating move by this company that to me seems to kind of target the vacuum left by companies like VanMoof that were trying to create a like high tech, not top shelf, but pretty high shelf component commuter bike. And that's what they've done here. A bike that's really designed for someone who is a cyclist already, it's got a throttle, but this is not a bike for someone who, wants like a crazy fat tire adventure bike. This is a commuter's bike. There's no suspension, so you've got to be one of these, people that already accepts that bikes don't necessarily need suspension, which is very much a cyclist type e-bike. So, to me, I just think this is a really cool offering in a market that is, I don't know if I would call it underserved or a market that just doesn't exist, like the budget premium commuter bike. I just like outside of sort of that failed, I think it was the VanMoof A5, if I'm not mistaken, that was kind of like a small diameter commuter e-bike with nicer, auto shifting and that kind of thing. Outside of that, I just don't know of any other e-bikes that this directly competes against. I don't know. Can you think of anything in this category, Seth?
Not offhand. I mean, the fact that it's got a $2,000, gearbox on a $2,000 bike, I'm immediately like, well, why don't you just, if you're in, thinking about getting one of those gearboxes, just buy the bike and, pull it off. And, but I'm sure
Just
that's,
sell all the components.
I'm sure it's not that quite that easy. But, obviously it's great to see that, $2,000 is the price that a lot of people are thinking about for their kind of like higher end premium bikes. So this is like kind of a game changer in that respect because there's nothing else. There's no other bike that you can get for $2,000 that has, this level of components, especially in the gear shifter department. I imagine that Electrek made it some sort of deal with Pinion to, to get their parts at a lower price, assuming they're going to probably make quite a few of these compared to, $12,000 Strommers and the other high end bikes that these things are on. So, it's certainly something that you know, merits attention. I have to say, like, two or three people got in touch with me after the story went live and were like, this sounds like the bike I want to get. Like, you know, people are kind of waiting for a high-end commuter bike. People who are waiting for a high-end commuter bike saw this and were like, okay, I need to think about this for a second. Can we talk about, like, the other stuff, like, you know, battery size and motor and stuff like that? I didn't quite check out
all. Yeah, that. Definitely. So the motor, it's a little over 1,000 peak watts. I forget. I mean, I'm sure it has a 750 watt, you know, sticker on it, but puts out a little over 1,000 peak. I think there are two battery options. Oh yeah, here they are. So, they're either 10.4 or 14 amp hour. That's like 500 or 670 watt hours. I think that there was talk of a bigger battery at some point. So there might even be a larger one, but, it's not launching with a third battery size that was kind of rumored. And both of the batteries are UL compliant. I think they're SGS tested. So, you know, they're not tested by Underwriter Laboratories itself, but they're, tested by a Swiss laboratory to meet UL, sort of testing levels. And then there's one thing that was kind of a criticism of this bike when it was launched was that it has a cadence sensor instead of a torque sensor.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I was talking to Levi, the CEO of Lectric about it. What he explained is like, yes, it does have a cadence sensor, but compared to most of the, like, you know, cheap 12 magnet cadence sensors out there, they're using one that has 96 magnets, which basically means it has much, much higher resolution. And so that traditional pedal lag that you feel on a cadence sensor where you start pedaling and, like, you know, a second or two later, the motor kicks in, that lag is significantly reduced just because there's so much higher resolution in this sensor. They also use what they call their power pedal assist system, PWR, which instead of regulating the pedal assist output based on speed, which is what we often, you know, feel on cadence sensor bikes where it'll lurch forward when you start pedaling, they do it based on current. So if you keep it in like pedal assist one or two, it's not going to try to lurch up to, like, you know, 10 miles an hour. It's just going to limit the current to a lower level. So you basically have a softer start, lower power. And then if you put it up in, like, you know, level 3, 4, or 5 or so, you're getting higher and higher current until you're at full power. And it's, you know, not as good as a torque sensor, but it's a decent ways towards a torque sensor and giving that more natural feeling, you know, non-lurchy pedal assist.
And as far as the belt drive, that's Gates, I'm assuming. And it looks like the front sprocket's a little bit small there, but I'm assuming that the pinion gearbox deals with all that stuff pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting because, you know, it does have a throttle. And the thing about throttles is if you're going to give, like, a nice commuter bike, especially one with belt drive, a throttle, then it's hard to go with a mid-drive motor, because if you go with a mid-drive, then there's a good chance you're going to be destroying your gears, you know, like we've seen on a lot of these high-power mid-drive motors. And if you want to go with belt drive, then that means you either need to, and if you want gears with the belt drive, not just to a single speed, it means you either need an internally geared hub in the rear, which would require a belt, which would require a mid-drive motor, since you couldn't have a hub motor back there. Or you can go with this solution, which is pretty rare, which is to use a gearbox in the front. And that allows you to have your rear hub motor, so you don't need the mid-drive. So it's an interesting solution here, one we don't see very often, especially not in this price range, but it allows them to give it a throttle while still having a hub motor in the rear with that gearbox. That being said, if you're the kind of rider who mostly uses throttle, then that pinion gearbox is probably wasted on you. Like, you know, if you're not a pedaling person, then what's the point in having a super nice German made automatic shifting gearbox, you know? So that's why I think this is really more of like the cyclist's e-bike, as opposed to the kind of person who would buy like an XP 3.0 and pedals occasionally, but really rides around on throttle most of the time.
Yeah. So when is this coming out? When are you expected to ride one?
I think they're supposed to be ready by May, if I'm not mistaken. And hopefully I'll be getting one a little bit sooner than that. But I might head out to Phoenix and try one of the couple prototypes they have already there that you see in the pictures. Though I think they deleted that that center kickstand since they took the press pictures. Now I think it has a side stand, which is a bit of a shame. because I like those center stands.
Yeah, those are definitely better for, especially when you have cargo. All right, yeah, let's move on. Bosch's first 28 mile per hour electric bike with smart system in US launched in Gazelle Eclipse.
Yeah, so this is, it's not Bosch's first 28 mile per hour bike in the US, but with their new smart system, which includes a number of different features plus their app. Gazelle says this is the first of the class three smart system Bosch's in the US. Now in the comments, a couple people said that there was a Canyon and maybe another one, that so it's a little bit debatable, Gazelle's claim here. But either way, this is like the very early stages of this new system coming to the US. And it comes in this new Gazelle Eclipse model, which is a sort of like combination trekking commuter bike. You know, it's certainly more robust than a traditional road or hybrid bike. So it's meant to be able to go on the trails as well, that sort of thing. And there are a couple versions here. There's one that has a Enviolo rear hub in the back, which is a continuously variable transmission. There's another one that has a Shimano, I think it's an 11 speed, if I'm not mistaken. So for folks that, you know, want to save a little bit of money, go with the derailleur, that sort of thing. Yeah, the 11 speed Diore XT there. It starts at 5,500 with that one. So I think the might be another $500 or so for the CVT version. This is, you know, not a a low cost bike by any stretch of the imagination, but Gazelle has never really been a low cost brand. You know, they've spent like 130 years leading the Dutch bike industry, so they know what they're doing by now. They're a leader in European electric bikes as well, and so you're definitely getting higher quality here. I was actually at the Gazelle factory last April or May, almost around this time, and saw the factory, how they build these bikes. And they really just put so much effort into the quality of the bikes that they're producing. You know, these are designed as 100% car replacement bikes, you know, not something that is like a, you know, take it out of the garage on the weekend kind of thing. So expensive bikes, but they build these things like they're meant to be someone's main vehicle, which, you know, I really appreciate as someone who rides on, you know, two wheels most of the time. So the Eclipse is a really interesting model just because it's designed for so much. You know, it's not an adventure bike. It's not a fat tire bike, that sort of thing. I'm not even sure if it has suspension. Oh, I think it does. Yeah, I have a suspension fork, but it's really designed for that sort of mixed role. Someone who commutes every day, but wants to be able to do some trail riding, that sort of thing. And to have that new Bosch system on there with the, you know, high torque, I think it's 85 Newton meters. So, you know, it's like Bosch's strongest, most powerful motor. It's class three, which, you know, in the US, we love our class three e-bikes being able to go 28 miles per hour. And it's got a big battery. It's like 750 watt hours. So, you know, Bosch's biggest battery. So not cheap, but it's got all of the best Bosch parts on it. It's got a great drivetrain. And I just think it looks really interesting. It's a really nicely designed bike. It's got that, you know, Dutch inspiration, but for a modern age, which I can really appreciate. I could see myself doing some cool, like, you know, bike packing or something, go out for like, you know, a 3-day weekend on this thing and have a cool camping trip. What about you, Seth?
Yeah. You know, this is kind of what we've been, you know, telling Bosch and some of the European cyclist makers to do is like, hey, look, you know, cut it with the 250 watt stuff over here. Nobody wants to hear that or see that. Although I imagine that they're, you know, if they're selling this in the EU, they're still slapping a 250 watt sticker on it.
Definitely.
And, you know, neutering it down to, you know, 15 kilometers or 15 miles per hour, 20 kilometers per hour. We're early today. So, some of our listeners might be from, Europe. No offense. Like, you guys definitely do a much better job with e-bikes. But, you know, we're kind of riding on the roads here, so we need a little bit more speed in the U.S. We don't have bike lanes, or, you know, it's kind of just painted on the side, like, you know, try not to kill a biker the side of the road. I know that's what it's like in Florida, New York as well. So we like to have our bikes a little bit faster. 750 watts is typical here. I don't see anything as far as the, you know, quoted wattage, but it sounds like this is getting a lot more powerful than bikes we've seen in the past from Gazelle and Bosch. So I think this is definitely more up my speed.
For sure, yeah. And oftentimes we have to use that torque number for European motors to compare, because the torque number is not regulated and they can be more honest there. So that 85 newton meters of torque puts it, you know, right near the top of Bosch's, you know, torque ratings, which correlate with power ratings. So, you know, it's definitely up there.
Is that, I mean, that's like what you typically see like on a small cargo bike, right?
Yeah, definitely. The cargo bikes are usually in like the 70, 80, sometimes 90 newton meter torque ratings. It's, you know, the Chinese motors sometimes go higher because like they just, there's no limits. They right. can make whatever the heck they want. Right. So that's where you'll see like, you know, the 120, 140, 160 newton meters. But especially in the German motors, you know, Bosch, Brose, all of those, 80, 90 newton meters, that's like, you know, serious torque for the mountain bikes and the cargo bikes.
Yeah, so this is one we'll definitely want to try out. Any idea when this is going to be on the streets?
Well, it's been in Europe for like 6 months. In the U.S., I think it's rolling out May, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool, just in time for summer.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's look at the Rad Power Bike's new e-bike batteries. Took a little deep dive here.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago on the podcast, we talked about, you know, the new Rad Power Bike e-bike models. They rolled out four models, and they also launched this new electric bike battery. And we didn't really go into the details here, but we took a bit of a deep dive here in this article talking about what makes this different and why it could be a big shift for the industry. These new batteries are actually potted with resin poured around them. So it creates this like impermeable barrier to the battery cells. So if you were to open this up inside, you'd just see what looks like, you know, if you've ever seen those like woodworking projects where they pour like resin epoxy into like gaps in wood. So that's what it looks like, you know, that mosquito in Jurassic Park in the amber, like it's entirely encapsulated. So you could probably dunk these batteries in water. I'm sure they'll tell you not to, but you could do it. And, you know, no water is getting into those battery cells. The connectors on the outside, that's a different story. But the whole point is that, you know, a lot of these batteries, even UL listed batteries, by the way, we've learned that water ingress is probably the biggest concern. And even when you have a UL listed battery, you can perhaps pass that 30-minute water jet test and get UL certified. But a year from now, is it still going to be as waterproof, you know, or like after a strong rain, you know, past 30 minutes, is it still going to be as waterproof? And so that's where these potted batteries make such a big difference. And so far, Rad Power Bikes is basically the only e-bike company that at least I know of that has pushed to make potted batteries standard. Years ago, Lunacycle was doing potted batteries. I don't believe they're making them anymore. And so this could be a shift in the industry. You know, when Rad does something, lots of companies listen. They get copied all the time. And while that's, you know, has its own issues, this is one area where I would love to see them get copied, just because potted batteries represent probably the largest single jump forward in safety that we have for electric bike batteries. So if this causes, you know, a shift in the industry towards a safer style of battery pack design, then I'm all for that. The one downside is that I don't know how they're supposed to be able to recycle these batteries. They say that they're still recyclable through Rad's internal battery recycling system. But I mean, you got to like get in there and manually tear the cells out of that epoxy afterwards. So, you know, I'll take them at their word. They say they can do it, but it certainly seems like there's a lot more labor involved in getting those battery cells back out now.
Yeah, we had Luke Workman on, I don't know, a couple months ago, maybe a year ago, and, you know, battery guru. And he talked about, you know, some of the fires that were happening in New York City and in surrounding areas, places where they salt the roads, basically. And the problem was that even if they're watertight, the salt water vapor was getting into some batteries, and that's what was actually making the short and the corrosion happen. So, you know, his recommendation was like, the only way you can fix this problem is do potted batteries. And at the time he mentioned like, that, you know, there was one solution out there, which was Luna's, which as you mentioned, I'm not sure if they're still making. So now that now there's another solution out here. As you mentioned also, the one downside is the recycling piece. Although, you know, I've seen, you know, like Redwood Materials, you know, the former Tesla guy, J.B. Straubel, I've seen like how they recycle batteries and they don't mess around. They just have a grinder and basically they just throw batteries in there and they just turn it to parts, you know, just to dust basically. And then they centrifuge out the important stuff. And, you know, I guess the epoxy would just, you know, they'd probably figure out a way to recycle that as well. But I mean, they would take it down to like, you know, I don't want to say molecular level, but like, like pretty
definitely dust.
Yeah, they were. I mean, there was no like, you know, like unraveling the coil or, you know, the foil or anything like that. That they would just basically grind it all up. I mean, I guess if you're doing large scale, you know, recycling, you don't want to have like 1,000 workers, you know, on the line pulling batteries apart. Yeah. You kind of just want to do it, you know, at scale. So maybe if that's the way they're doing it, these potted batteries can be recycled easier. You know, maybe Rad has a agreement with one of these recycling companies to do it that way. But
how is there not like a constant battery fire in that grinder? Like just a continuously going battery fire as they feed more into a grinder.
Maybe that's part of it. Maybe the you know, they're melting it all down into a you know, a substrate, you know, like a molten, like, you know, like
a battery emulsion.
Yeah.
Interesting. I got to look more into that.
Yeah. I've just seen some like B-roll that, these guys put out that, you know, they just have like a bunch of all kinds of batteries and barely unwrapped, you know, these are from like laptops and, you know, stuff like that. And they're in a like conveyor belt going into this like old school grinder, and then just like black dust comes out, and I'm sure it's ruining the air and people are getting cancer, but it seems like a better long, you know, a better scalable solution than the, you know, older school way of kind of pulling the batteries out. And, you know, like, unfortunately, you know, like on a Tesla Model S, like you could pull the batteries out of the car, and they would still have like 60% of their battery capacity, and you could put them on a, you know, a power wall or a, you know, stationary storage, and it would still be valuable. This isn't that. This is just, you know, throwing them into a big grinder. So I don't know exactly what the story is there.
This is like, you need some cobalt?
Yeah, exactly. It's basically turning it into like ore. All right, let's move on. Ride One Up, CF Racer One review, testing the lowest cost quality carbon fiber gravel road e-bike.
Yeah, so I recently finished this review, and this is a fascinating e-bike because kind of in the same vein of the Lectric One in that it takes what should be a much more premium e-bike and it makes it accessible to like normal people like you and me, you know, someone that's not going to buy a $6,000 gravel carbon e-bike. Here we've got, I think it's a $2,300 e-bike, carbon frame, and it's got a lot of the type components you'd see on much nicer road and gravel bikes. And it is available in both road and gravel format, with the difference largely being the tires and like slightly different handlebars. You know, we've got a nice, I think it's 11-speed Shimano on there. It's not as nice as you'd see in, you know, some of these like super fancy bike shop bikes, but still, you know, great for normal people, enthusiasts, recreational riders, that sort of thing. We've got the drop bars, which for me, like, I'm almost never on a drop bar bike. Like once or twice a year, I find myself on a bike like this and I got to like re-remember how to do the double tap shifters. Mm-hmm. But it's like a really cool experience if you're into that, you know, fitness riding, that sort of thing, where the nice thing is that you also have those three different hand positions. So you can be like down real low, or you can be up on the horns, or you can have your hands in the middle for like the most upright position, which I do a lot because I just don't like to be super tucked. You know, if you're trying to do 40 miles an hour constant, then you might want to be tucked. But this is, here you can see here, I'm just like barely touching it to lift it up. It weighs, I think, 28 pounds, 13 wow. kilos, something like that. Yeah. So just like super, super lightweight. Something that you'll almost never see in an e-bike like this, just because, you know, all of these components weigh a significant amount. So 28 pounds is just nuts for this kind of bike, you know, so lightweight. It almost feels like the bike's empty when you pick it up. Like where's the battery? Where's the motor? The sort of secret there is that those parts are kind of low power. You know, the motor is 250 watts, 42 newton meters of torque. So, you know, it's like less than half of that Bosch mid-drive we were looking at. The battery, pretty small, 250 watt hours. And it is built into the frame. You can take it out if you ever need to replace it, but not, you know, quickly for charging. So the downside is you've got lower power, lower performance, but this is in the same vein as the electric one. This is very much a cyclist's e-bike. You know, this is something that you're only doing pedal assist. There's no throttle. So you're someone who already likes to pedal. You probably already ride for fitness and you just want one of these nicer carbon bikes that has a bit of a boost. You know, you can ride out, not feel like it's an electric bike. And then you can use that electric power on the way back if you're tired, or you can use it to get up those hills and stay with, you know, the Peloton as everyone else that's, you know, 20 years younger than you is flying up it and you can match their pace kind of thing. Or like, you know, couples that one is a cyclist and one isn't, you know, they can both ride together and do the same speed and same course without one of them, like, you know, needing to be towed back kind of thing. So a lot of cool opportunities here. And just the fact that you can get a lot of these parts that, you know, people like me who would never ride like a, you know, $5,000-$7,000 gravel bike can finally get on a bike that is fairly affordable at $2,300. The last sort of cool thing I really liked about this is it comes in two colors, gray and black, but the black is called rainbow gloss. And in bright sunlight, you see all these like rainbow paint flecks in it. You can kind of see it here. It's hard to capture with a camera lens, like so many cool things in life, but when the sunlight hits it, it just like sparkles like a, I don't know, like a My Little Pony scene. And it's like just every color of the rainbow is shining out so brilliantly. It looks really cool. When it's overcast, it just looks like a black bike. Like you'd never know all that is hidden under the paint. But as soon as the sun comes out, it's just like right in your face. And I just think it's such a cool paint job. I've never seen anything like this. And I love it.
Yeah, there's another bike I've seen recently with that. It's the Luna X2. Also carbon, same kind of thing though. It really kind of adds a little bit of extra to the experience. But so this bike looks pretty awesome. Were people, so I don't know if you even care about this, but do people even notice the rear hub motor? Do they think you're on an e-bike?
So where I ride, it's mostly on road, which is ironic because this is technically a gravel bike. But I'm not getting passed by a lot of cyclists because I'm in that like painted bike lane on the side of a 50 mile an hour road.
Right.
So I didn't get a lot of looks at it. But each time that like when, as I was editing the video, it was like tough to get an angle where you could see the motor while I was riding. So if I know it's there and I can barely see it, then I have to imagine that like most people that even know, you know, all these different, you know, nicer, you know, Ribble and all these other nicer brands of gravel bikes that probably wouldn't even realize this is an e-bike until they got up super close and, you know, saw the hub back there. And some people might even think it's like, you know, a dynamo or a, you know, internally geared hub or something.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. And the down tube is like kind of, I mean, it's a little bit bigger than you would expect, but not much. And I've seen down tubes that don't have batteries that are bigger than that, and you know, just various designs. So if you're one of those people who like, you know, want to keep your you know, electric situation on the down low, this seems like a good bike for that as well. And you know, I think a lot of the people who have like the what do they call the down handlebars? I think you're not expecting to see electric on those anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Or if you are, it's like, man, that guy's got money.
right. Usually they're quite expensive. So this one's obviously on the road or, you know, on the streets right now. What kind of like reaction did commenters? Because I think this is probably a pretty big deal. The giants of the world are selling, $4,000 or $5,000 versions of this. So this is, price point is pretty interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, all of the, not all, but like, probably 90% of the reactions I've seen so far from people commenting have been quite positive. Now it is a very niche bike, right? Like gravel bikes are already kind of a small category within cycling, and electric among that. So, this is definitely not going to be one of Ride One Up's bestsellers kind of thing, but from the people who are into this, and it is very much a growing category, I've just seen a lot of excitement that like, finally there's a bike that brings a lot of this at a price point that I can afford kind of thing. And again, you're going to find nicer brakes and nicer shifters and stuff on the higher end bikes, but this is all very good quality stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, shelf,
like it's all good stuff.
Yeah. SRAM stuff is usually pretty top shelf. Is this like starting to feed your, cycling? Are you thinking about becoming a gravel biker, or is this kind of one and done situation?
So my best friend is very much into gravel biking, and sometimes I'll ride with him on bikes that are definitely not gravel bikes, but like, because they're electric, I can just force it and make it work kind of thing. But I'm thinking about, trying to do like a little more sort of purist gravel biking, or traditional, maybe not purist if it has a motor,
right?
But, like he is one of these guys that'll just like go out and ride 100 miles kind of thing, and I definitely couldn't do that, but I can finally keep up with him now, and like he doesn't have to like slow down and go easy for me to like follow along on my rad mission kind of thing. So I don't know if I'm gonna go like full spandex, but I definitely enjoyed this. The one thing is I'm just not like a super tucked guy, so that's why I like that middle position on like, real narrow on the bars, because you can almost kind of sit back like that.
Well, when you have the electric assist, your aerodynamics isn't quite as important.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I don't think they're going to give me like big Dutch bars kind of thing,
right?
But, being able to be a little more, and like, I think even in the video you see, like I had my seat like a little lower than is probably ideal, just because, I mean, most of these bikes, the seat is, 6 inches above the handlebars to get like the proper fitment, and that's just not like, that's not the way I like to ride. It's not a comfortable way for me.
Did you embed the video in this one? I don't know if I see it.
Past it should be at the top.
Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah. Oh yeah, we were watching it earlier. That's cool. I actually kind of want to try this one. It seems pretty cool. There's a so you mentioned the 100-mile bike thing. There's this race that goes across, I think, Iowa. It's just like 100 miles. You wake up in the morning. I think it's even more than 100 miles, and you basically cross Iowa on a gravel bike. It's like one of those races where, you wake up in the morning and you try to get there. You wake up in the morning at the crack of dawn, you start, and then you hope to make it before it gets dark. Maybe it's 200 miles. I don't know. Anyway, it's a crazy bike ride, and I was thinking about trying it. It's like one of those things. Like if I had time and I had training, and I would do all these things. But I wonder if I could sneak one of these into that. That would be fun.
Is Iowa pretty hilly?
No, it is not hilly.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. That's the best kind for gravel bikes and stuff. All right, let's move on. Bike tricks. I always say Bic Trix, but Bike Trix makes sense. Unveils 2300 watt full suspension electric mountain bike with two chains. I love the sound of that.
Yeah, it almost looks like a typo in the headline, the 2300 watts. So if you do live in a hilly area, this thing would probably climb up a wall if the tires were sticky enough. This is the full suspension version of the Juggernaut, a bike that Bike Trix launched, I want to say almost 2 years ago in a hardtail. And they developed this interesting drivetrain. It's their own motor, but what they've done to ensure that they don't destroy the bike chain with 2300 watts of power is they've created a separate, basically transmission on the left side of the bike. So, the pedal drivetrain is untouched, and on the left side of the bike, there is another chain ring. There's a idler to make sure that, you know, the suspension still works. And then it drives to a drive sprocket on the left side of the wheel. So you've got two parallel independent drivetrains, one for your pedaling power and one for your motor power. And it looks kind of weird because we're not used to seeing all of that going on a bicycle. I mean, it looks like, you know, from the left side, like a light motorcycle, and from the right side, like a bike. But what it does is it gives you basically dirt bike power in a bicycle style full suspension mountain bike. So, you know, you can still ride the same trails. If you're on, like, you know, dedicated mountain bike trails, you should probably drop that power down, make sure, you know, pay attention to the rules, that kind of thing. If e-bikes are allowed, but you can ride this in a traditional mountain bike setting, or you can take it, you know, overlanding or onto like dirt bike trails and that sort of thing. And you can actually keep up and handle it. You know, it's got the power to be able to do that. It's got a pretty big battery too. I think it's like 960, maybe almost 1,000 watt hours. So, you know, pretty large battery, which is something that you need with that much power. If this had like a traditional, you know, 600-700 watt hour battery, that thing would be draining super quick from that ultra high power motor. So really cool to get like this full suspension set up with so much power. The downside is it's definitely not cheap. I think the MSRP is something like 5,500, 6,000, but it's launching with a couple pre-order incentives that bring the price down to about $4,500. So that's, you know, more in line with, you know, nicer electric mountain bikes, but this is not that. I mean, it's a nice bike, but, you know, this is not like a, you know, a Trek or a specialized mountain bike kind of thing. This is like a dirt bike in mountain bike clothing. Decent parks, good suspension, but if you want to upgrade to some of the better suspension, that's going to add significantly to the price. You know, that entry level price is with, you know, decent level suspension. So to me, this is really for the kind of person who lives near some intense trails, wants to be able to do overlanding, wants to be able to like literally climb a mountain with their bike and not necessarily stick to like, you know, the manicured trails kind of thing, wants to go out and chart their own course. For that, this bike just seems like, you know, limitless. Like it can just handle so much more than a traditional 500 watt, 750 watt mid-drive mountain bike from some of the, you know, Trek, Giant, Specialized, Cannondale, the usual suspects, that kind of thing. It's just built for so much more than that. I don't know. I feel like in Vermont, you could find some cool places to ride with this thing.
Yeah, I was actually, while you were talking about that, just like, oh, I could take this up the mountain. Like, it would be kind of a fun, you know, like if there's a bunch of ski mountains around here that in the summertime are, you know, downhill bike mountains, and you only have to pay to go up the lift, so you wouldn't really even need a lift ticket, save some money there. But, you know, obviously that's kind of a niche case. What do you think? So, you know, obviously, you know, you know, in the comments, people are probably like, we just get a Suron or, you know, whatever. But like, is this going to be as a pedal bike? Is this going to be with the two chains? Is it going to, by the way, when I was reading that bike with two chains, I thought like, there's like some rapper, I think, named Two Chains. So I thought maybe it was like a collab. But this is not a collab with Two Chains. This is a bike with two separate chains. But do you think those two separate chains, you know, when you're pedaling and the cadence sensor, and like, is it going to be a smooth ride, or is it just going to start, you know, like you touch the pedal and then you're, you know, off to the races? Or what do you think it's going to be like to actually use this thing?
Definitely. Well, I have to imagine that the second like motor chain freewheels when you're not using it. So hopefully that doesn't interfere in terms, you know, interfere with the experience, like the bike side experience. Hopefully in terms of that cadence sensor, you know, it feels like a more refined ride. Obviously, you know, we don't like when they're jerky and that sort of thing, or they, you know, lurch forward, which we see with a lot of cheaper components. But at, you know, $5,000, you have to assume that they're going to be using higher end sensors and components here. But I think that, like, you know, there's definitely going to be that kind of, you know, why don't you just get a Suron kind of comments there. But in my opinion, the goal of this bike isn't to just have a dirt bike. You can do that for a lot less money. I think the goal of this bike is to give people the mountain biking sensation, you know, the experience that you can actually pedal up the side of a mountain. It's just that you're doing it on a slope that you would never be able to pedal on with a traditional electric mountain bike, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It is significantly heavier, you know, it's like 80 pounds. So if you're taking this on a downhill course, you're going to feel a lot more weight. But to me, the whole point is to give people the ride. You know, they're not driving it like a dirt bike kind of thing. You know, they can be pedaling it, and that pedaling is unleashing 2,300 watts of power. And to me, that's the big differentiator here.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it doesn't seem crazy heavy. I think I read it was even less than 80 pounds, like 70 pounds, 71 or something. I don't know. That doesn't seem crazy to me. Like, you know, obviously Surons are over 100, even some of the, you know, road, you know, like the, you know, moped-y kind of e-bikes are over 100 pounds. This doesn't seem crazy heavy. So it would still be, you know, trail worthy. And, you know, obviously with full suspension, see the RockShox there?
Yes.
I think this would probably be a pretty good ride. So tell me about the motor on this one.
So it's apparently independently developed by Bike Trix. They say 2,300 watts peak, but you can significantly limit that if you don't want all that power. But mm-hmm. because it's not, you know, like a Bafang Ultra or something else, you know, that we're familiar with, we don't have too many details about how it works. I have to imagine it uses sort of like a similar planetary gear setup. But, you know, whether they went to a motor manufacturer and said, like, build us something special, whether they actually, you know, built it with their own engineers in-house, it's a little bit hard to tell.
Yeah, the fact that it's got two chains on it means that it's probably not an off-the-shelf type of situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Looks interesting. Are they, when's this going to hit the road?
I think soon. I don't recall the exact date on this one, but I don't think it's going to be a terribly long time. They already have most of these components out for a while now because they have a hardtail version of it. So this is just basically a frame update to create a full suspension.
Okay. And correction there, it is 71.9 pounds, but that's before the batteries is inserted. So a little heavier, probably 80 something pounds after that 910 watt hour batteries popped in there.
Yeah, I'm guessing low to mid 80s probably then.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Last story. If you guys have any, I see a couple comments. If you guys have any questions or comments, leave them in the comments field. We'll hit that after this story. But this one's Ampler launches sleek new lightweight on and off road commuter electric bikes.
I think it's fun how many different styles of bikes have come out in the last couple of weeks. This is very much a different bike than the one we just looked at. There's no suspension here as opposed to full suspension. And this is a European designed, European legal sort of trail version of a road bike. The Kurt is one of Ampler's most popular models. Ampler is an Estonian e-bike company that builds their bikes locally there in Tallinn. I've actually visited the factory. It's really cool to see how they build these things. And they've got their own massive paint shop there. So they came out with all these new colors with this launch as well. But the Anyroad takes that road version of the Kurt and it beefs it up a little bit. It gives it different tires and it creates basically like a, I don't know if it's fair to call it like a trekking bike. It's not quite there, but it is designed to be able to head out on the trails. Again, you know, no suspension here. So another sort of cyclist's e-bike, quote unquote, but it's cool because Ampler has always been this company that says, you know, we're not going to push out a new e-bike for a new e-bike sake, you know, like innovation just so that they can have a new model every year. They wait and they say, you know, we're going to run our e-bikes as long as we feel that these bikes serve the market. And we're only going to come out with something new when we think it actually adds value. And so, you know, it's been a couple of years, I think, since they've had new models launched. And so to finally see a new model from them and to open up a new area of riding, I think is really cool. And it also just speaks to me this sort of like brand ethos of theirs that, like, you know, we're not just going to make our bikes obsolete every year by coming out with a new model year. Like, this bike was great last year and it's great this year kind of thing. So I definitely respect that. And having, you know, been to the factory there, seeing all these, workers and building and testing and packaging and like all the care that goes into these bikes, it just really speaks to the company itself and, you know, how much they care about the bikes they build. I should point out again, you know, these are European bikes. They're not super cheap. I think this one's in like the high 2000s of euros, so probably like close to 3000, but they do have models starting in either the high like 1800-1900 or the low 2000s, I believe. So, you know, they're not terribly expensive, but these are European design, European built e-bikes. These are not, you know, definitely not OEM white labeled, and they're not imported from Asia. So that adds to the price, but they make, you know, beautiful models. They're not available in the US yet, but I have to imagine they're going to want to come to the US soon, just like how Gazelle eventually, you know, brought their Dutch bikes to the US market. I have to imagine eventually Ampler is going to come over here. So for now, these are just for our European friends, but they're awesome, awesome e-bikes. And, you know, I definitely recommend these.
Yeah. We mentioned, Van Moof vibes before. This has also given me a little bit of Van Moof vibes, as well. Like it's, you know, similar bike style, you know, integrated, motor kind of, you know, street, no suspension, but, you know, also high quality, and kind of, you know, integrated everything. So, how are they gonna, you know, kind of survive when companies like Van Moof didn't? Like, what's kind of their secret sauce?
So their secret sauce is that the company that they get all of their high-tech solutions from, you know, like their Internet of Things device, you know, the communication module and everything, the company that makes that sort of owns Ampler. So they're it's very incestuous. I'm not sure which is like the parent company anymore, but Co-Module, which makes all of their tech, for the communication stuff, was started by the same person that started Aika, the scooter company. And they were in the same city as Ampler. And I think they bought Ampler or they merged with Ampler, but somehow now it's all like one big company. So basically their supply chain is not through several Asian companies to find the supplier of their communication boards and all their tech stuff. It's literally like the same building or the next building over.
Okay. I mean, it seems like a great situation. You mentioned that they're not in the US. Was there any discussion like outwardly or inwardly about, you know, exporting to other markets? And, you know, like, obviously my first inclination would be like that would be cool to be in the US, but we have different expectations here of bikes, and that's probably not what this bike's all about. But what's your take there?
Definitely. Well, I certainly haven't heard any definitive like, oh yeah, you know, quarter three of next year, we're headed to the US kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you that, but they've expanded basically all over Europe. So, you know, they're not like a limited company. I was in their flagship store in Amsterdam last year, which is like an Apple store for Ampler bikes. The fact that Van Moof did pretty well in the US, like I saw tons of Van Moofs in cities, especially, you know, like New York, San Francisco, those kinds of cities.
Yeah.
I have to imagine there's a market for these, you know, people that want a high quality, not Chinese made commuter bike. I mean, these things would probably be under $2,500, $3,000 in the US, which Van Moofs were even more expensive than that. Like, I could see a market for these. So no, I haven't heard that they're coming to the US, but companies with similar styles of bikes have succeeded in the US, and I could see it on their radar.
Yeah. And I guess it wouldn't be too hard to import a bike like this. You could just, you know, have somebody send it to you.
Yeah. And I think a few people have actually like privately bought them. I think there are a few that way in the US.
Yeah. It would be, you know, having a more unique type of bike that nobody else would have if you wanted to pick one up overseas and have it shipped over. All right.
Yeah, definitely. And they are pretty lightweight, so, you know, save a little on shipping.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's there's only a few comments, so let's get in there. Let's see. EUCs have done some amazing things with the potted batteries and even per-cell BMS monitoring. That's from Micro Mobile Blade. What does EUC mean?
Electric unicycles.
Oh, interesting. That's yeah. that's an area where it just looks like too scary for me to like even begin. Like, I feel like I've missed the electric unicycle thing. I mean, I'm going to try a one wheel, but the unicycles are just too scary.
So, well, first of all, I can definitely see why electric unicycles would benefit from this, because this is a group of riders, not all of them, but they have a large contingent of EUC riders that like really push these things to the limit. And I've seen videos of, you know, people going downhill like as fast as they can, and they hit the like limit of how fast these, you know, electric unicycles can go, at which point it can't balance you anymore because it just can't push itself any faster to stay under you. And if you fall off one of these doing like, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, it just starts cartwheeling. And like this thing is just flying through the air, spinning like a blender, you know? And so if anything is going to have like protected high quality batteries, it's going to be the vehicle that throws itself down a mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. Just not even in my vernacular. Like, I can't even imagine that situation. And I see, you know, like people like Lynn from Carbo, were just like flying around New York City on one of those things. She was just like fearless, but I mean, you know, her balance is really good. She's like a former figure skater or something, but, you know, my friend who's older than me, rides one of these around Paris, and I'm like, dude, how do you, like, I just don't understand. It just looks so unsafe, but I don't know. People are just doing it.
So I'm working on an article now. It'll probably be discussed in our next Wheelie podcast about this new InMotion E20 electric unicycle that's designed for people like you. It's basically meant to be a beginner, easy to learn electric unicycle. And the funny thing is it actually has two wheels. They're just next to each other instead of like tandem, like a bicycle, and they're very close. And so it balances, I think, side to side much better, which is the hard part of starting to learn one of these, because it'll balance you forwards and backwards, but you got to not fall off to the side at low speed, which is tricky. And that's sort of the learning curve that a lot of people don't get past. And right. So this might actually be a good one for you to try and, you know, give you that like confidence that you're not going to kill yourself right off the bat kind of thing.
Right. Well,
it's also super slow. It's like 12 miles an hour or something.
Okay. That seems safer. I mean, I think part of it is that I'm not used to forward back balancing. I'm, you know, I'm living up in Vermont and snowboarding every day. I'm, you know, side to side. You know, I skateboarded when I was younger. I had, you know, longboards even recently. So I'm used to the riding sideways. So the one wheel makes a little bit more sense to me, you know, just from my, you know, how my brain works. So I wonder if that's one of those things where like skiers like the unicycles and snowboarders like the one wheel types.
Ooh, that'd be an interesting survey. Next time you're on the mountain, you should go around with like a little legal pad. Yeah. Excuse me, do you have a moment, sir?
Exactly. All right.
Well, we'll have that one for probably next week. We'll talk about how that one works.
Yep, totally. All right, that's all for questions.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in, and we'll be back here in another 2 weeks for the next episode of the Wheelie Podcast. Take care, everyone.